Good morning to you if you are waking up on your Wednesday. I feel your pain this morning. Generally, I don't have any trouble staying up overnight. I'm pretty good at it. Night owl is when I operate at my best, actually, is late night and overnight. I tend to have a different kind of adrenaline. We'll call it after hours adrenaline. Anyway, not tonight. It's one of those nights into days where I'm traveling and I know it's crazy, but I don't sleep. When I'm traveling, I don't want to waste the day. So I end up going home, finishing what I need to at the house, taking care of the pets, and then going straight to the airport, which is what I will be doing today about mid-morning and catching the flight. And so I don't sleep well on planes. And as it turns out, I did not sleep well on Tuesday. Oh, heavens. It was just one of those days where sleep was really hard to come by. So about 3 hours of sleep on Tuesday. I know. That explains why the show sometimes has odd words in it or thoughts. I don't know. Actually, I think I've kept it together pretty well on this edition of the show. But it's going to be a challenge to clean anything when I get home. At least my suitcase is mostly packed, but I do have a house sitter, so I can't just leave without finishing. I did clean the bathrooms. The floors are mostly clean. Her room is made up, but I still have dog and cat things and some vacuuming to do. Actually, given vacuuming versus cleaning my kitchen floor, my tile kitchen floor, that one is a lot worse. Just gets so dirty so quickly with people and pets tracking in and out. I know I'm part of that. It's amazing how dirty we get in my family sometimes. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. We're live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need cash out of your home and a simple way to get it, Rocket can. So if you're feeling the heavy on this hump day morning, well, I'm with you. And I'll be awakened with you for most of the hump day. I don't think my flight lands in Houston until 4 o'clock Central Time. So it's a long haul. I got another 11 hours to go before I'm even off the plane. And then this is what happens when I get to mom's house. Now, she'll be home from school by then. Her husband will pick me up at the airport. So she'll be home from school and they'll probably be hungry. I'll probably be hungry and they'll want to eat. And then she'll want to talk and visit and all that fun stuff. And usually what happens is I tell her, I'm just going to take a quick nap. And she will not let me sleep all night, of course. So I'll take a nap and she'll come in and wake me up. Sometimes it takes more than one attempt to wake me up after I've been awake for nearly 30-something hours. I mean, it's been 35, 36 hours before sometimes. I don't think it'll be quite that bad today, but it'll at least be 30. And so then she'll want me to get up and I'll feel like I got hit by a truck and it won't get better until I wake up Thursday morning after sleeping. But the good news is that I don't have to worry about waking up to walk my own dog on Thursday morning. So that's fantastic. The last time I was in Houston, I had my dog with me, so there was no sleeping in, but I might be able to sleep in on Thursday. That's what I'm keeping in mind right now. A flight and sleep at some point. So good morning to you. I hope that you're far more refreshed than I am. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We have really covered a variety of topics on this show already. Everything from John Wall and his revelation and his encouragement to some of the cuts from NFL Cutdown Day to Cynthia Freeland and her interesting day and what really happened with Baker Mayfield. We'll actually let you hear that explanation. Just to be like completely transparent, we had reached out to Cynthia Freeland to appear on the show because she does routinely. She's one of our favorites and she's a friend of mine. She's the commissioner of my fantasy football league. Anyway, she last week was on the East Coast, so it was a little bit harder for her to join us. So she wanted to wait till she got back to LA. So producer Jay reached out to her on Tuesday without knowing that she had kind of been in the center of a firestorm. And if you don't know, well, I suppose you will explain it here coming up. A simple conversation with Baker Mayfield turned into a big brouhaha. But the whole thing, well, you know how it is with the NFL. Everything gets overblown. And so her explanation of it is, well, it's accurate also, but she puts it in perspective, which I appreciate. So you'll hear that from her. But we did a lot of fun stuff with Cynthia. She's got this new formula. I don't know where she comes up with all this unique math, but she does. She loves it. She's the queen of data science. She's got a new formula and some analytics that rival wins above replacement in Major League Baseball. So she's got kind of this formula that works for the NFL, where she can assign value based on various factors to different players and how many wins they're good for. Now, it's analytics, of course. I mean, it's, you know, you take it with a grain of salt, but it is interesting to see her plug in the various factors and come out with these numbers. And I'm just always fascinated by the formulas that she is able to generate. She's always got some new statistical category. So she's a lot of fun. She loves football and she loves math, and she's made a career out of combining the two for the NFL Network. And so we'll hear from her. In addition, we will have a QB news before this hour is up. But for the first time, John Gruden speaks out on the emails that led to him resigning from the Vegas Raiders not quite a year ago. We still had him as the head coach of the Raiders this time last year, but he was making an appearance and he wanted to be frank. He did not want to avoid the questions. He didn't want to avoid the topic. What he wanted to do was not only tell his side of the story, but also admit to what he did wrong.
I'm not going to say anything but honest things here. I'm ashamed about what has come about in these emails, and I'll make no excuses for it. It's shameful. But I am a good person. I believe that. I go to church. I've been married for 31 years. I got 3 great boys. I still love football. I've made some mistakes, but I don't think anybody else in here hasn't. And I just ask for forgiveness, and hopefully I get another shot.
I don't know if John Gruden gets another shot as a head coach. I would be surprised by that. Although Mark Davis obviously loves him, but now Mark Davis has Josh McDaniels. Maybe as a assistant coach, I could see that. We have seen guys pop up again after time away as assistant coaches. And he did have opportunities to be a college coach. He had turned those down before to stay in media until Davis offered him a 10-year deal. He's 59 now. And as you hear him say, he's sorry and he's asking for forgiveness for these emails that were leaked and then published in various newspapers or online. And it was a lot of offensive language. The part that Gruden doesn't understand, I think the part that a lot of people don't understand, is how it was only Gruden's emails that were leaked, even though there were upwards of 650,000 emails collected in this investigation of the Washington then Redskins. But the Washington football team, a really extensive investigation about workplace culture and about the toxic environment that was created under Daniel Snyder, 650,000 emails, and only John Gruden's got leaked. So either someone had a vendetta against him, or this was done intentionally. I mean, there's a lot of different theories, and he's filed a lawsuit because he believes that the NFL and the commissioner chose to leak his emails to force his removal. I mean, that sounds very conspiracy theorist, and yet there's a reason why only his, I don't believe in coincidence, there's a reason why only his emails were leaked. If you remember, there have been attempts by different news organizations, by different media organizations to uncover the rest of the Washington investigation, But the commissioner has managed to dodge that to this point. And so instead it's John Gruden who gets exposed. Not that he should be protected for these things. It's just you can understand why he would believe that he was targeted. Why he was exposed on purpose where so many others were protected. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. John Gruden at Tuesday at the Little Rock Touchdown Club. I mean, recognizes that he's been a target and that, you know, the news cycle, the media cycle can latch onto something and spin and spin and spin out of control almost.
I get choked up, you know, because there's a lot of misunderstanding out there right now. What you read, what you hear, what you watch on TV. Hell, I worked at ESPN for 9 years. I worked hard at that job. I don't even want to watch the channel anymore because I don't believe everything is true.
He goes on to say, and I worked at the same place, I know a lot of it is just trying to get people to watch, but I think we've got to get back to reality. So John Gruden speaking out for the first time since his resignation with the Raiders, who then had Rich Bisaccia as their head coach and actually went to the playoffs and finished with double-figure wins. Now, of course, it's Josh McDaniels, and Bisaccia is the special teams coach in Green Bay, which I think if you're going to have to start over and land somewhere new, well, that's a good place to land.
People are coming here to play with me.
Well, you know that too. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So we will do some QB news coming up, but Kyle Shanahan speaking out about Jimmy Garoppolo staying with the Niners. Now, this is a conference call, so the audio is a little muddy, but you can hear it. It's just not quite what you would expect if he was sitting at a podium. He says that they wouldn't have kept Jimmy Garoppolo or wouldn't have wanted to restructure his contract if he weren't a legit number two behind Trey Lance, but he is behind Trey Lance.
Trey's our starting quarterback. I mean, that's why Jimmy wasn't an option unless he came in as a backup role. And that didn't become an option until it was clear that, at least so far, that no one was given the exact human opportunity.
So again, the audio is a little bit dicey just because he's on a call and it's being recorded off a call. But he does refer to the lack of options for Jimmy Garoppolo and the fact that Garoppolo had to agree to a backup role. But I don't know how many people out there are buying, and this includes our former NFL QB turned analyst, Sean King, who joined us on our last show. He actually believes this is the right move for the Niners because they have a veteran option who knows how to win should Trey Lance not pan out. And that's the dilemma. I think that's what a lot of analysts were thinking it would be better to avoid. But hey, if you're the Niners, I get it. You want to break in your young QB. He fits the offensive system of Kyle Shanahan. And in addition to that, he's athletic. He's explosive. He's cheaper because he's on his rookie deal. You moved up to get him in the draft last year. So, of course, you want him to work out sooner rather than later. But you also want to win. And they got to the NFC Championship last year. Trey did get a couple of starts. But Garoppolo was the far better option. Has it changed that much? Is Trey Lance now commensurate with Jimmy Garoppolo? I mean, he has a higher ceiling to be sure, but he also at this point is higher risk. Higher risk, higher reward than a Garoppolo who you know what you have when he goes on the field. I don't know. If I'm Kyle Shanahan, I of course am preaching the fact that Garoppolo is the backup and this was the best option for him to stay here. But I'm also recognizing that he's the best option for us at backup as well. And with a young starting quarterback and with the injuries that are so replete in the NFL, you never know when you're going to need a backup. Wouldn't you rather have Garoppolo than anybody else in the league? Sure you would. By the way, it's 8 days until the NFL kicks off. Just saying. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. What was the reaction of young Trey Lance to Garoppolo sticking around?
Trey and Jimmy have a great relationship. I think Trey actually likes having Jimmy in the building, and Trey was very grateful to how Jimmy was to him last year. And we feel very strongly from the two people that Trey will, Jimmy will give that back to Trey this year. He'll do for Trey what Jimmy did for him in the year before.
We shall see. It is great intrigue around the Niners. Again, they made it to the NFC Championship last year, and of course, they have those aspirations. They've got a talented roster. They've got some of their roster questions settled. Spent some money this offseason. Debo Samuel, he's unique and he's a weapon. Yes, so is Trey Lance. But if it doesn't start out quite the way they expected in a division that is tough, do you consider making a change? And even if you don't consider it, what are the chances the media never brings it up? Hey, you've got this other guy who actually played in a Super Bowl for you, who actually has helped to guide you to a couple of NFC championships. Any chance you might use him instead? Nah. Are you even thinking about it? Oh, he's going to be so mad about the quarterback questions if they start out slow. All right. On Twitter.
As long as I can keep surviving press conferences.
Never. On Twitter, A-Law Radio. We're not going to take it easy on you, Coach. Also on our Facebook page and our YouTube channel named after the show. Super easy to find. We are so happy that you're with us on this Wednesday morning. I don't think I'm to the point where I'm delirious tired yet. Am I making any sense, Producer Jay?
Yeah. You're making sense.
Are you sure? Seemed a little hesitant there.
No, everything's great.
Oh, gosh. All right, don't need you to be disingenuous in there. You see the generous grin on his face like, I got to sell this. Everything's fantastic. A-OK. Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. You don't like when I give a thumbs up, but.
I do not like it. It feels very condescending or dismissive when you give me a thumbs up.
It's not meant to be.
When was the last time you actually used that outside of the radio studio?
I don't know. Up. Only because I'm doing like 400 things here like an octopus. So that's the only way I can just
a like, nod I got it. Works fine. A smile works fine. Thumbs up, Amy. That is, can I tell you, next to K? So you ever had people?
I don't do that.
No, yeah. you don't do that. I'm saying next to people sending you a text message that's K. That it's annoying and rude, and I think it's done on purpose. The thumbs up or okay emoji is just as bad. Like, I had someone send me recently a thumbs up response to a text. I'm like,
no context?
No
words. I mean, they didn't respond with
no,
any words. They just did a straight thumbs
just
up.
Just a thumbs up.
Yeah, that's rude.
It's annoying, is what it is. And I think it's meant to be. It's meant to be that way.
It's snarky.
It is very snarky. It's snippy is what it is. Or the okay emoji.
It's like implying that like I'll do it, but I'm not happy about it.
Or
like that.
I don't like what you said, but I'm going to pretend like I did.
I mean, along those lines.
It's definitely meant to send a message.
Yeah, there's something underlying when you send that.
Yeah, so you know what I did when I got it? I deleted the entire text change. It was like, see how you like that.
No time for people like that.
Yeah, done texting with you, if that's all you've got to say. Not even have a great day, sleep well, just okay emoji.
Yeah, I think you made the right decision.
It's not okay to send an okay emoji.
Never. We'll never get there as a society.
No. Coming up, another big home run for the leader in Major League Baseball, and another leader in Major League Baseball hits the IL. Plus, have you been tracking how many wins the Dodgers have now? Oh my gosh, they're obscene. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
One, two. Hit well to right. Aaron Judge has done it again. Number 51 for Judge. He's 10 away from Roger Maris. It's a three-run shot. And the Yankees have opened it up. It's 7-2.
Trying to stick to my game plan. I didn't start off the night, you know, too hot with a strikeout. But, you know, the guys picked us up and, you know, got us some early runs and allowed us all to kind of relax and go out there and stick to our approach.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Thanks for hanging out with us on The Hump Show. If you missed anything, you can grab it on the podcast, afterhoursamylawrence.com. Quick trip around the bases, if you will. Of course, if you're Albert Pujols, it takes a little longer. If you're Trey Turner, well, you zip around the bases. The Dodgers, the Mets, they were squaring off at Citi Field. They had rain. Meanwhile, the Yankees were on the West Coast in Anaheim, where they ended their three-game losing skid, and Aaron Judge wields the big bat. Another crack home run, 51 on the season. And then you hear him after that. He did have three hits and three RBI, though he laments the strikeout that he has to open up the game. For the Yankees, they were able to survive despite having to really go deep in their bullpen because their starter, Jameson Taillon, was hit by a comebacker and left the game after two plus innings.
Yeah, it's happened to me a few times where I've taken him off the head and stuff. So, you know, thankfully this one wasn't something like that. But it's always scary. You don't have too much time to react.
He took this one off his back. So his follow-through from throwing the pitch had him turned backwards toward the plate, and the ball kind of bounced off his back. I can't remember exactly what part of his back, and then kind of bounded away toward first base, but definitely was out. I mean, that's the danger of that position being right there. Yankees, though, maintain that lead atop the AL East for now. We're in a holding pattern, even as we head into the month of September. You guys, it's August 31st. Seriously, it's legit August 31st for every single time zone in the United States right now. I'm delivering you the okay emoji. Okay. I mean, I'm glad for the fall because I'm done with the summer. It's been a summer in many ways, and I'm ready for it to be over.
It was a long game.
It's been a long freaking game, that's for sure. All right, so Mets and Dodgers, two division leaders, the two best records in the National League. They were going head-to-head at Citi Field on Tuesday.
2-1. Canna drills it. Left field, way back. Long gone. This game is tied. Mark Canna buries one into the seats in left.
Payoff pitch. And this ball is hit into center field. A base hit for Lux. On a 3-2 pitch, he reached for it, knocks it into center. Freeman scores, and the Dodgers lead it 4-3. Brandon Nimmo representing the tying run. Reed sends one home, and it's a ground ball off the glove of Reed. He picks it up, long underhand toss, and the Dodgers win it. Jake Reed, he is pumped up down there with his first career save, and the Dodgers hang on to win it by a 4-3 final score to win their 90th game of the year. 52 games over 500, and the Dodgers first in Major League Baseball to get to 90 wins.
Just an incredible game to be a part of. You know, super thankful to just be back here, you know, in LA and have trust to, you know, be given the ball and that opportunity. Just means a lot, you know. So just kind of a crazy full circle thing being back here in New York, but just an awesome game, man, and just thankful to be a part of it.
This is one of the great moments for me personally. I just had a chance to spend some time with Jake, and he was really emotional and said that it was more emotional than his major league call up. And just, you know, for him to be on the taxi for seemed like a week, but to be ready when called upon, obviously our bullpen was in the thick of it. So to be able to rely on him, and he was going to finish the game, however that meant. And it was just good the way it worked out, and just so happy for him.
That's the voice of Dave Roberts speaking about, I don't know if it's his new closer, but in a closer situation, a save situation, Jake Reed, a former Met, comes in and gets the save, and Dave Roberts is thrilled for him. And you hear Jake on Sportsnet LA, the fact that he's back in New York and told his manager now that this was more emotional for him than his call-up. And if you haven't seen the end of this game, I encourage you to do it. Jay actually described it as Jake Reed celebrating like they'd won the World Series. But you can imagine the years and years. I mean, he's not a young guy. What is he? Almost 30, I think. And so the fact that he was cut by the team, that he just earned his first career save against, I mean, all of that makes it a very emotional moment.
Yeah, the atmosphere at Citi Field, it just started pouring too, and the crowd was like screaming, you know, that classic O chant, and it was like, you know, it was bases loaded, or it was the bases loaded. It was men on first or second, I believe. So they had a chance to tie the game, maybe take the lead, walk off. So the crowd was in there, and he celebrated like they won the World Series, because you could tell he wanted that one.
Good for you, Jake Reed. A little bit of vindication, a little bit of to your former team. Or you could just send them the K in a text, group text. K.
That's basically what he did.
Not the F, not the middle finger, I mean.
No, the K is more effective.
This wasn't Baker Mayfield.
Not this. He should have just sent a K.
He should just group text to all the Mets, all his former teammates. K.
Or just boo the shit out of him.
Thumbs up emoji. Anyway, the Dodgers are obscene. They're now at 90 wins. And there are others who are in 80-plus wins, and that does include the New York Mets. And so it's a two-horse race right now. I don't know if you could call it even a race between Dodgers and Mets for best record, but those are the top two teams in the National League, so it's kind of cool to have them facing off. Two more games. Clayton Kershaw will return to the rotation coming up on Thursday. They're bumping Dustin May, and Clayton will return from the IL against the Mets at Citi Field. I will not be in town, but if I was, I would do absolutely anything to be at that game. That's got to be amazing. I'm a huge Clayton Kershaw fan. All right, before we wrap up here and get to the update, I just want to mention Justin Verlander, who's sitting on 16 wins, tied for most of the majors, is also hitting the IL/DL/IR. I don't even know what they call it anymore. But it's best case scenario for Verlander.
As far as the spectrum of calf injuries go, I feel like this was about as good a news as I could have gotten, specifically because I did feel a pop. And so usually that is attributed with some muscle damage. So fortunately the pop that I felt was my fascia and not the muscle. So all in all, I think this is about as good a news as I could have hoped for.
You ever noticed how he and Max Scherzer, former teammates, go so in-depth when it comes to their injuries? Like, so in-depth. It's amazing how much detail they provide. I don't know if it's just a thing for the two of them, or it's a...
I came out because I had a tight hammy.
Former Tiger thing. All right, coming up, it was an interesting day for one Cynthia Freeland of NFL Network after she relayed a comment that Baker Mayfield made to her about week one, Panthers versus the Browns, turned into a big brouhaha. So we asked her what happened. And then a little bit of QB news to tack on as we head to the top of the hour. Ready, break.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
All right, the Browns are up to the line. Third down and goal at the Giant 2.5. Janovich leaves the backfield, goes to a wing left side. Here's Mayfield turning, play action fake to Chubb. Looking, fires, ends a wide open, caught, touchdown, they got it. It's Hooper!
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
On Browns Radio, Browns Radio Network, it used to be Baker Mayfield. Now it will be Baker Mayfield for the Panthers in week number one. Ooh, that's going to be so good. And considering what we heard from Cynthia Freeland about Baker's attitude toward week number one, well, it's become even more interesting now. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. We're bringing back a couple of questions here with Cynthia because she's always fantastic. Queen of data science for NFL Network. And the second question is about Baker. But before we get to that, why don't we, Jay, play the snippet that got so much attention. So Cynthia went on a podcast and she talked about an exchange that she had with Baker in Charlotte.
And I walked up to him like, I'm so excited to see you. Like, kick some butt, especially week one. I like, cannot wait. And he uses some expletives and I was like, I just hope you're like, he's like, I'm going to bleep them up.
I'm going to f*** them up. Is that what his quote was?
Yes.
You.
All right. So that's Cynthia Freeland and the host. It was Around the NFL podcast. And that made the rounds in Cleveland. And as you can imagine, lots of reaction. You're going to hear her explain because I ask her what happens with Baker. But first, I want you to hear this because this is really interesting, too. If you're getting ready for your fantasy football draft, Jay, one of the new formulas she's developed essentially charts how many wins a player is worth. Now, this is only on the offensive side of the ball, at least for now, though she says it does apply to defensive players. But I asked her to kind of explain how this formula that she developed can rank NFL players based on the number of wins that they will mean for your team.
Yeah, so I framed everything in probability of earning a first down or touchdown, so keeping the ball in your possession, and then ultimately led that to how historically that's mapped to wins or not wins, right? So losses, right? So when you look to see how each, you know, team, then side of the ball, then position group, then individual player, how it sort of breaks down so they're contributing to the bottom line, the win or the loss, you can actually sort of pinpoint how each player relative to each other at their same position is doing. So, you know, I do it in terms of like, win shares. It ends up being a metric of games, but it's not a perfect science because if you say like Aaron Rodgers is worth 6 wins or whatever, and then you say like, you know, Patrick Mahomes is worth 6.1 wins, it's not like, you know, obviously games can't be fractional. If you don't have Aaron, you don't get 6. There's always some difference between it. So it's just look at, you know, the value of Aaron versus the value of Patrick this year and look at the difference between the 6-1 and the 6 there.
Who are a few non-quarterbacks that were near the top of this list or near the top when you worked out all the science?
This is the first year. So usually you get like a pass-catching running back will almost always have one of the highest win shares, mostly because they're on the field for so much volume. So that's historically how it works. But for the first time ever, top five, I have a tight end. So Travis Kelce, he broke into the top five in terms of win share, which is super fun. And, you know, look at his red area production over the past few years, not just his, but the win share also takes into account how a player impacts the game when they're not the subject of a target. So when Travis Kelce's on the field, it makes it a better opportunity for the running backs to have space or for the wide receivers to have more, you know, more separation. So things like that. And Travis Kelce, his impact in the red area the past 5 seasons is just unmatched. So it was actually pretty cool that he busted into the top 5 because usually it's, you know, a passing running back and then a wide receiver. And then, but this year, he snuck in. It's pretty fun.
What happened with Baker?
I mean, it's really not that big of a deal, but I was at the end of the game. The Bills played the Panthers. I walked up to Baker. I offered him good luck. I truly want to see Baker go out and light it up. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a first overall pick. He's got a lot of firepower. He's a good quarterback. We've seen very good production from him. It's not like, you know, something crazy. And I have covered him since before he came out into the league. So, you know, I remember like doing a lot of analytics on him because remember back then he was quote unquote very short. Meanwhile, we have much shorter quarterbacks now, right? When, oh, he can't be an overall first overall, it's ridiculous stuff, right? So now, you know, I want him to prove everyone wrong. Like I spoke to him after the game and just the same as I would tell any of my girlfriends who are, you know, going to a wedding and having to see their ex, I basically was like, give them the revenge body, you know, come with a cuter date, show them what they're missing out on. So at the end of the day, like I just was, we were having a conversation about that and I was supporting Baker and, you know, he agreed with me because let's be honest, what's he supposed to say in that situation? He's supposed to be like, you know what? I don't really want to beat anyone this year, let alone the Browns, you know, like it just, and then it, you know, but it took on a bit of a life of its own and it's okay because look, I know my intention and, you know, we were on a field. It was not a text message exchange. There was no whatever in that regard. We were on a field after a game, and I was offering support. And then I think there's a lot of people who take the time to say mean things about Baker. I was taking the time to say supportive things about Baker. And, you know, I shared it and kind of got a little out of context, but, you know, whatever. It's kind of like, if people stop and stand back for a second and they're like, oh, a former player wants to beat the team that didn't give him a long-term contract.
Right.
Is there any surprise? Like, it's a little silly. But.
It is silly. And I think most people would say that they agree with you. They want to see Baker do well in week number one against his former team because of the way it played out and because of who they replaced him with. I think if people are being honest. So, yes, a little bit silly. Just out of curiosity, did you hear anything from him after all this uproar?
I heard a lot of stuff, not from Baker directly. I think that at the end of the day, the people with the best egos, meaning the ones who are going to actually win, I didn't hear anything from them, and they didn't even know what was going on because the good people are focused on football.
I like how she says that, the good versus the bad. It's like the light side versus the dark side. The good are focused on winning football games. I said this to Cynthia. I said it earlier. I'll say it again. I'm pretty confident that outside of Cleveland, I understand outside of Cleveland, you don't feel this way, nor should you. Although maybe there are a few Browns fans who would like to see Baker Mayfield exact a little bit of revenge in week number one. But I think I speak for many football fans when I say I'm pretty sure a lot of us would like to see him throw for 300 plus yards and 3 or 4 touchdowns in a victory over the Browns. Maybe that's the only loss the Browns have all year. Maybe there's always that possibility, but there's this element to it that a lot of fans will want him to get a little vindication. Just kind of, hey, see what you're missing. I like how Cynthia points out that that's what she would say to one of her girlfriends. Show up with a cuter date. Let him know what he's missing. Boom. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. By the way, Deshaun Watson is now officially serving his suspension with the Cleveland Browns. So he left the training facility on Tuesday, and that is the start of what is an 11-game suspension, though he cannot return to the facility or have contact with the team until mid-October, cannot practice again until November 14th. As for Baker Mayfield, he no longer has Sam Darnold or Matt Corral, who will back him up in Carolina. He's going to stay healthy. We know he'll play hurt, but now it's PJ Walker, who has been elevated quickly to QB2.
It happened pretty quick, but, you know, me just over the process of the training camp and OTA's always been preparing to just always be ready. That's the way you got to approach it, you know, especially, you know, being a backup role. You have to just be ready no matter what. Never know when your number's called, so just always got to be ready, stay prepared.
Yeah, it's that's one of those situations where you're just hoping, if you're the Panthers, that Baker stays healthy all the way through. Think about Dak Prescott right now, the only quarterback on the Dallas Cowboys roster. And Pete Prisco in CBS Sports HQ points out, well, technically one is all you want.
If you're playing your backup quarterback for more than one or two games, usually your team is dead anyways. And that would be the case for the Dallas Cowboys, whether it's Will Greer, Cooper Rush, or Brady Quinn comes out of retirement. It doesn't matter. If Dak Prescott isn't playing, your season is over.
CBS Sports HQ and NFL analyst Pete Prisco. So the Cowboys are likely to bring someone back, but had to make some space and had to make roster cuts, as many teams were making tough decisions on Monday and Tuesday. Certainly didn't turn out to be the decision that we thought for Kyle Shanahan and the San Francisco 49ers and Jimmy Garoppolo, but there is some resolution to that quarterback question. What about the quarterback question in Pittsburgh? Hey, Mike Tomlin. Oh, hey, Coach Tomlin. Are you ready to name that starting QB?
No, I'm not.
I love him. He's the best. Wait, can he wax poetic? I like it better when he goes on a little bit. This is from Monday.
I might, but you guys not going to have it today. Again, like I told you guys the other week, man, we're not going to make knee-jerk reactions and statements following a performance. We'll go through our proper professional procedure. We'll evaluate the game. We'll meet with our front office people. We'll have discussions. We'll talk internally. We'll talk external possibilities. We'll go through our normal procedure this time of year, and we'll disclose it to you at our leisure, to be quite honest with you.
At our leisure. I love that. Professional man of leisure. I love what Bryant McFadden told me about Mike Tomlin, that this is just, I mean, he's funny. He's a funny dude, but that he speaks like no one else in the NFL. And of course, he commands respect. 15 years, no losing records. This is the first time, though, without Ben Roethlisberger as his starting quarterback. All three moved their units. I mean, that's just what you need to know. You don't need to know anything else about the quarterbacks in Pittsburgh right
now.
They
moved their units.
All three moved their units, which means that all three are viable options. That's what he told us earlier in the preseason. All right, peeps. I was halfway delirious for the show. If I said something that made no sense, just nod and smile or send me a thumbs up emoji. It'll be fine. I'll totally get it. I am out until next Tuesday night. I'm taking my summer vacation late. I promise that I will return, though. And then we'll be close to the start of football. So I'll talk to you then. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Boom!